never rests. Welcome in. It's the Georgia Show, and there's a lot to talk about tonight. But before we get into any of that, let's talk about our friends over at Whataburger. They will be in Athens this upcoming weekend for the Kentucky game, bringing the Whataburger Touchdown Tour and the food truck to Athens. So come hang out with them, man. If you haven't had Whataburger, it's good eats, man. Breakfast all day. They've got you covered on that. Great burgers. If you've ever been anywhere that a Whataburger's opened up, there's a line, and there's a reason why. So get over, check out Whataburger and the food truck this weekend in Athens ahead of the Kentucky game. They will be out there and about, and you can find out more on social media as to their exact location. But I imagine they'll be around Tate Deck or something like that.
Yeah, that's where they were last year. And, yeah, you know, Whataburger, yeah, that's where they were last year. And there's a couple of them in Athens now. So, you know, there's a lot going on here. And I want to say there's some little activity happening a couple of days ahead of time on October the 2nd. You know, I think they're doing a little thing with Dr. Pepper on the 2nd as well. So, you know, a lot going on with Whataburger this weekend here in Athens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, make sure you get over there and hop in on that. Gentlemen, let's dive right into this thing. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Georgia falls to Alabama, ending the home win streak, and the Crimson Tide once again get one over on them. 24-21, Alabama pulls this thing off. A lot of finger pointing in the fan base today and last night. Everybody wants everybody to be wrong. And to some degree, I think that everybody shoulders some blame. I do believe that that's probably the case. Maybe some more than others, but I think that this is a pretty shared loss on a number of fronts. So I'm just going to put it to you both exactly like the little banner says down below. Rusty, what went wrong for Georgia last night?
Well, when you go back to the Tennessee win a couple weeks ago, you know, I told somebody, I may have said on here, when that Georgia-Tennessee series, if you're a Tennessee fan, you always kind of are like, if these two plays would have went differently, we win this game. You know what I mean? And I kind of feel that's the way with the Georgia-Alabama series. You know, Alabama played a clean game, a really clean game. And very few mistakes. And Georgia had two or three plays in this game that were huge plays that were turners. And you can't make those mistakes in games like that. And you know, we're gonna dig into this, but you know, initially they gotta figure out how to start better defensively. I mean, they're playing from behind so quick. I mean, am I right that they had Jake? Did they have Row, they had 2 14-play drives to open the game.
That is correct. So,
yeah, I think at one point they had 24 offensive plays to Georgia's 7. I mean, you go back-to-back.
28.
14-play opening drive. I mean, drive, that's nuts. That's insane against Georgia. And we're going to get into this whole game, but I think that there's a lot of different things in there. I'll say this, and I'll be very clear. I thought Ty Simpson was – lights out. I mean, that dude has got an arm. I found he was one step ahead of Georgia. You know, when they blitzed, he got rid of the ball. They never could get to him. He made some throws in some tight windows. I'll be honest with you, I didn't realize he had an arm like that until seeing it in person. I mean, that kid can spin it now. You got to get pressure on him. They were unable to do that. But, you know, that's kind of my first initial thoughts as we start this conversation.
Jake, I want to go stick it on that defense because I think that that's pretty crucial, particularly the third down defense, which absolutely just killed Georgia throughout the evening. I believe I saw somewhere, and I may be misspeaking, but I it was the most third down conversions they'd ever given up.
Last 30 years.
In the last 30 years. There you go. Okay. Not ever, but in a while.
The last 30 years, that's the most third down conversions the Georgia team's ever given up in the last 30 years. That's insane.
Yeah.
8 of 8 is how they started the game. They hit their first 8. Now, you know, positive, you didn't give, and that was in the first quarter, I believe. So you only give up 5 third down conversions after the first quarter, but you give up 8 in the first quarter. I mean, 28 plays and 168 yards after, you know, 2 drives. That's what you're looking at. And Georgia's given up 35 points in the first quarter of its 2 SEC games thus far. 35 points. Now, man, we can talk all day about the offense and what the offense could have done more. You talked about it kind of being a team loss, Roos. This is one of those things where you can point to just about every position group. No, you can. Every single position group, every single coach that leads this position group,
yeah,
side of the ball, pretty much everything but special teams, and say if they had done something a little bit better, Georgia's got a chance to win this game. But defensively, man, I mean, Georgia's not built to give up 35 points, you know, to give up 17 and a half points a game in the first quarter and just win at a high rate. I don't know very many teams that are, to be honest with you. Like, it's just not something that you can live with. It's not something you can continue to do. You know, a couple of years ago, Georgia had a stretch where teams scored on their opening possession, like 6-7 straight games. But after that, that was it. You know, it was a drive. It was a touchdown. And pretty much Georgia was able to, in 2023, Georgia was able to kind of put the clamps on after that and offense get back in it. And in most occasions, the offense got back in it and grabbed a lead and you know, one that it was able to kind of work with. It's so much different when teams are getting points on 3 and 4 of their first 4 and 5 possessions. And, you know, we're only 2 games in, right? We're only to league play. Georgia's a quarter of the way through league play. It's a third of the way through the season. So there is a long, long way to go. And, you know, after last year, I don't know. I can't sit here and say every single time that Georgia's going to get better as a football team, but they've got a lot of time to do it. And my thing is, they are not incapable, because – Let me recite something here from you from the second half. Georgia, I want to say Alabama ran 37 plays for 135 yards in the second half. Guys, that's good for 3.9 yards per play. 0 points. That's great defense. We can debate here all day long about whether or not it's elite defense, but objectively great defense. So I go back to what I said all offseason about the offensive line. When you carved up Texas for a half running the ball, 2 separate halves running the ball, you carved up Clemson running the ball, you carved up Auburn at times running the ball, especially with your kind of running back game. Don't tell me, you know, this is an incapability issue. This is not a player not able to do it issue. This is not having the guys to do it. It's not being in the best position to make those plays and do those things when it matters a lot. And you know, coming back and playing 2 fine quarters of football defensively, that's awesome. And then the offense didn't do enough to win you the game. But I have no doubts about the ceiling of this Georgia defense. I saw it on Saturday in the second half. Less than 4 yards per play. And you just didn't do it out of the gate. You allowed 8 of 8 on, you know, I mean, get yourself in a 24-14 hole at the half, 14-0 mm-hmm. hole. I mean, keep doing that, you're going to lose more ball games.
That right there, what you just said, to me is so reminiscent of what the offense dealt with last season. Those slow starts, and you would get in that hole, right? And then all of a sudden in the second quarter, or in the second half, it started clicking. But you were putting yourself behind the eight ball by not getting off to the start. And defensively, it certainly feels like that's the case, man. I think that's kind of crucial. I saw this today and I could not believe this, guys. And I wanted to put this out there. Georgia now 4 of 3 in last 7 games against Power 5 opponents and needed overtime to win 3 of those. And that was Georgia Tech, Texas, and Tennessee. And so a lot of people have a lot of questions as to the trajectory of this program. Is it trending up? Is it trending down? Are we kind of in a wait and see on this? And I think a lot of that stems from some of the hires that people continue to point to. Stacey Searles, Mike Bobo. A lot of people last night were throwing a lot of shade at Glenn Schumann. Dante Williams was a guy who was catching a lot of fire. And, Ro, I'm just curious, your thoughts on, you know, are we witnessing in real time the house burning down around us?
No, I really don't think so. Like, I mean, I get the frustrations and everything, like I do, but I, you know, and listen, Kirby, I tried to press Kirby last night on a thing and he just cut me off, and that's fine. That's what happens. It's media. I'm not offended by it. I think Kirby's a great coach, and I think Kirby's right when he says that this is kind of college football now. The fact that you're not able to kind of keep a super large piece of your, you know, your program in there, and you know, you're not able to retain at the high at a high level as you once were, and you know, you've got fewer players that can kind of adjust play to play as opposed to, you know, needing to get to the half and needing to get to this point where you've got to do these things. Now, I certainly think Georgia's I'm going to tell you, I mean, I think Georgia needs to do a better job coaching. Now, they're not going to – I don't think they're going to go firing a bunch of guys and replacing a bunch of guys midseason. And I've told people this over and over again. I made a decision years and years ago when I started this, and I've never heard Rusty do it, and I've never heard you do it. I'm not going to start calling for people's jobs.
Sure.
I'm not going to do it. You know, I know it may make some folks feel better, just like it would have made folks feel better if Kirby would have grabbed the podium last night and said, I am a bona fide idiot and I hate myself. Like, they would have, folks would have felt a lot better last night if he would have done that. It would have accomplished nothing, but some folks would have agreed with him, and that would have been about as far as it went. But I do think Georgia's got to coach better, and for evidence that coaches can coach better, okay, I've been on Stacey Searles. I've been on Stacey Searles for the lack of ability to run the ball last year and to fix the issues last year. Stacey Searles' offensive line actually looked like it got something done during the bye week. Like, it actually – the right side protected. Georgia ran the ball down Alabama's throat. They created explosives in the run game. They opened up some big holes. They looked pretty good in short yardage the vast majority of the time, one play notwithstanding. So, you know, I do believe these coaches have coached better. I do believe these coaches will coach better. But, you know, I'm not trying to change anybody's mind right now. They're unchangeable. You'll get in a fist fight with somebody right now before you'll change their mind.
Rusty, I want to ask you about probably the most controversial play of the whole night, Cash Jones on the fourth. Mm-hmm. One that I think stunned a lot of people, and I was one of them. I said, this of all the moments – for Cash Jones, this is not the one I would have picked.
So here's a couple of ways of that. Okay, first of all, that is a huge play in a game. Don't sugarcoat that. But it was in the third quarter. I think today people have worked themselves into that was 2 minutes ago and the game was on the line. That was a huge play in the game, but it was in the third quarter.
It was in the fourth quarter, a little earlier in the fourth quarter, but it was in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, so early in the fourth, you still have, you know, almost a whole quarter to go there to do that. And, you know, I don't have a problem going for that. I didn't like Cash Jones east-west there. You go back and you watch the play with pace. You go quick on that, and we heard Kirby's explanation. The guy makes $13 million to make that decision. We don't. You know, but we do give an opinion. We get paid to give an opinion, so that's what we're doing right here. I didn't have as much problem going for it as I did going east-west. You look at the play. You want to get football nerdy. If they make the block on LT Overton, he just about walks into the end zone, okay? But their player made a play. You know what I mean? And I'd rather than seeing Josh McCray hammer it and try to get 2 yards there. I'll be honest with you, and I'm not going to be that guy. If I had to bet, I think Gunnar Stockton got the first down. Okay, going with pace.
You said that in real time, by the way. Check that spot.
Where me and Jake were sitting in the press box, I felt like I was on that yard line, and I was like, "Damn, he's a." I thought he was over a foot at minimum. I was like, "He got it." I was like, "That was a hell of an effort to stretch for it." I feel like Gunnar got it. You didn't get a booth review. You didn't get somebody to call down. You go with pace. Kirby said, and I talked with some people in the building today, 100% believe it. on third down, you know, before he makes that call, Bobo's got, like, I got two plays to make this call. You know, they get 4 yards, well, they get four on the gunner, I guess 3.5, and then you go for it there. Just didn't like the east-west with that. You know, but if you block it right, it's a walk-in touchdown. You didn't. Kid made a play, and you kind of you live and die with that. And but still had plenty of opportunities to win that football game. And you know, you just – again, when you play a clean game like Alabama played, it starts magnifying those little – those mistakes you make and decisions you make and plays like that. So – it's out. Look, guys, I'm not sure because it's Alabama. They flat out own this series. I don't care who, what you can look at this thing for a million ways. Okay. As much as Georgia owns that series with Tennessee, and they do, they own that series. Alabama owns this series. Georgia has found ways to lose this game in different ways. Alabama at times has been the better team and won it. Georgia almost beat them in 2017 when they didn't have the better team. They should have won that game that night, was unable to finish off the national championship for whatever reason. I don't have the answer. Alabama owns this series. Everybody's pissed off about it. Everybody's tired of losing to Alabama. I get it. But don't put this on to where this is where Georgia's program is. Yes, they've been in overtime. They've won those games in overtime. They found ways to win those games. This is a team that won the SEC championship. They're 3-1 right now. They got a lot of football left in them. And I think Jake's right. You know, I don't know the ceiling for this team, but they've got a lot left in them. And they got a lot of young kids they're playing, trying to find out what they can do, how they can get better. They're not going to sit around and pout up. You know, that's not who they are. But I don't have the answer. But Alabama flat out owns this series. And I'm telling you right now, I've been doing this a long time. That damn quarterback last night was picking them apart. They couldn't get pressure on him. And when he had to throw it into tight windows, when they dropped into zone, and I felt like they had a good play design there, this dude was on the money. And somebody told me today, I don't know this. You guys give me an opinion. I had a former Georgia player tell me today, he goes, Rusty, we may have already played the best two quarterbacks in the SEC because both of those guys can freaking throw it. I don't know. They're not. You know, we'll see down the line. But I promise you right now, you give me Garrett Nussmeier or Ty Simpson next week, I'm taking Ty Simpson. I'd roll with him right now. Athletic dude, freaking hose, man. But Georgia's got to find a way at some point when they play Alabama, they got to find a way to get one. But they haven't been able to get one, and it's just been a thorn. It's been the butt. When you mentioned Kirby Smart, multiple national championships, SEC championships, 33-game winning streak, all those things. Then you hear the butt, the Alabama game. It's just hard to believe it keeps going this way. But at some point, sometimes you got to give a little credit. They own this series. And it's very similar to me, how Georgia just knows and finds a way to beat Tennessee.
I want to hit on a few points here real quick. First of all, I thought Ty Simpson played really well. I don't think I could get quite on your level, Rusty, of like thinking he was just doing some things that Georgia couldn't really control or was doing some special.
He got in a rhythm. That didn't help anything. But I'm talking about as far as like arm strength. I didn't realize he spun it like that now. I mean,
I see, you know, I look back. I watched the game a couple times over today, and he did a bunch of good things, especially on the road and all that stuff. I mean, they also gave him some good opportunities with the screen game and those things. And he did a good job kind of, hey, when they came after him, he had something quick to get out to and all of that. You know, but I look at what Georgia did with him in the second half when they got just a modicum of pressure. They were able to really kind of hold them down. And that was, thing for me. Going back to the fourth down play, I kind of look at it completely different, Rusty, because I look at it as that's earlier on in the fourth quarter. Tie this football game. Get points in that situation, you know. And then two, what they tried to do to Alabama's defense, they actually did to their own young offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. Like they, you know, hey, don't let them get their cleats in the ground, rush it. Let's not let them get ready. And then, you know, Juan Gaston's over there, you know, busting a block. I'm not even going to be hard on Juan there. Because, you know, you're in there in a situation you've never been in before, going 100 miles an hour, And, you know, yeah, you need to make that block. You know, if you just step in there and shield him off like a basketball screen, it's a better play. But, yeah, and then also, I mean, I don't know, man. And I wrote this after the game. You know, Kirby is big on talking about, you know, like in, talking about the players and talking about doing it on the field. Man, if you're going to tell me players over plays, I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine with it because, listen, we'll jump back to Todd Monken here real quick, who is apparently the architect of everything great that's ever happened at Georgia, apparently. You know, and he's the best offensive coordinator in school history. I've got a weird relationship with this whole thing. Todd Monken and Kirby Smart don't win national championships without Brock Bowers. Okay, like Brock Bowers was the straw that stirred the drink, was the unique unicorn type player that made it happen for those guys. Todd Monken has won one Big 12 championship way back in the day, in a wide open, no defense playing Big 12 without Brock Bowers. All right, so we can kind of, you know, say that, and I think Todd Monken's an elite offensive coordinator. You're not going to catch me saying anything bad about him. But if you're going to say players over plays, get your best player in the football game to run name, yeah, run play.
I don't care
if you run counter or what. Get Josh McCray or Chauncey Bowens with the way Chauncey Bowens was running the football into that game to run that play.
Yes. Yeah. That's what got me about it. That's where I couldn't agree
with you. That's enough of a reason for me not to go fast. Okay, Bowens, we can't go fast. We need our best player in here.
Bowens last night, and we're going to get ready to – on the flip side of this, we're going to talk about some of the good things. Chauncey Bowens was one of the good things that you got from last night. Last night was the Chauncey Bowens coming out party, and I could not believe that in that situation you wouldn't turn to the hottest hand. And, I mean, that's the hottest hand anybody's had in the backfield in probably two seasons, it felt like. I mean, it's been a while since somebody kind of put together a performance like Chauncey had yesterday against the Crimson Tide. So that's kind of what shocked me about it was, you know, if you're going to go for it, I'm with you in that sense, Jacob. Like, then it's got to be the best guy. And Cash Jones is the best running back option that Georgia has available.
10 times out of 10, I kick the field goal. Sure. Just to tie that football game because you had battled back. You hadn't had a chance to lead the football game yet.
Yeah, never led.
Down pass. You've got to tie that football game at home right there. You tie the game, like get your crowd into it. You know, see if you can go out there and do what you've been doing in the second half, which is get another stop, and then put together a situation where any score at all gives you the lead. And yeah, I mean, I don't understand not kicking it, and I certainly don't understand not making sure. You know, Saban told a story a little while back, or I saw a story from him a little while back about he got a chance to his coach asked him what he wanted to run when he was playing quarterback in high school, and it was a two-point play or a goal line play. And, you know, what it boiled down to is the lesson he learned on the play was players, not plays. Get the ball to your best player in the biggest moments. And I'm not just saying get the ball to your best player overall, but you want to get the ball to the best player suited for that position, which is why I think Josh McCray is option number one. Clearly, they feel great about giving Josh McCray the ball in a short yardage. Giving the ball.
Yeah, I bet. I bet they do.
Damn hammer, just man.
Do it.
Absolutely. I can't understand for the life of me who from the Georgia side was not in charge of, hey, we might need to check this gunner spot. You know what I mean?
And that's the pace. They were so, you know, they got caught up in it. It happens sometimes. Coaches are imperfect people. They got caught up in wanting to go quick.
But somebody in the box got to say, coach, we might want to check this spot. You know, this was because I'm telling you, like, dude, that was – I would be shocked if it wouldn't have been a first down. Is what it is. It wasn't, but at least help yourself there. But you know, it that situation. I didn't like that. Didn't like East West with Cash. And you know, I heard Kirby when you pressed him. You know, you pressed him, Jake, and you asked him. I'm sitting beside Jake Roos. I'm up there, and there's about eight people left, and I'm sitting there, and Jake slams his laptop down. He says, I'm going to ask Kirby about that, and I'm going to ask him about Cash. And I'd be damned if that man didn't walk. He walked himself from the top of Sanford Stadium, and he went to that damn press conference. So don't you tell me that Jake Rowe is going to sugarcoat it.
I told Rusty, I said, I'm about to go press him on cash.
He goes, all right, I'm going to ask him about damn Cash Jones. And I'll be damned. I'm sitting up there watching the press conference. You see Kirby on the field in the golf cart. And I'm like, I wonder if Jake got down there fast. There's no way Jake made it. By God, they started asking questions there with my man Roe back there. So, you know, look, we're gonna do our job and ask questions. Look, guys, I know everybody's frustrated. I feel you. I promise you. I feel you on this. I don't have the answer for this series. But I can tell you that until they find a way to win one, it's one-sided. It really is. They have found ways to not win that game. And you also got to give some damn credit to Alabama, man. This Absolutely. Is a damn good football team. They're going to be a good football team. I don't think Alabama is as good as they have been. I don't think Georgia's as good as they have been. I don't know that anybody's as good as they have been. It's just
maybe Vanderbilt.
With 45 seniors, they might be. Vanderbilt's going to play Alabama next weekend with 45 seniors or graduate players. I'm telling you, I'm very interested in that game.
I am too. I am too.
I tell you what era of college football we're looking at right now. 2022 Georgia, 2021 Georgia, 2020 Alabama, 2019 LSU would beat the absolute breaks off of the best teams in college football right now.
No question.
And that's just the way it is.
Ton of parity. It is what it is. I'll say this too. I'm not trying to open up a million can of worms, but coaching becomes that more important when teams are this equal.
It does.
Little things like that are going to make differences. And you, as a person that's covered this program, a person that's covered this program, you look at Georgia, let's just go 2021. They're 14-1, 15-0, 13-1, lost that one game to Bama, won 11-3 last year, won the SEC championship, go to Sugar Bowl, lose that. Now they're 3-1. So we've covered a ton of wins. Kirby Smart's got as good a record as anybody in college football. So, you know, this guy knows how to win games. This series right here has been his boogeyman. You know what I mean? What does Georgia do the rest of the time here? They got huge games. They got great opportunities. They got these games at home. But, you know, we can beat a dead horse all you want to. I thought about it on the way home last night. A bunch of text messages. What's going on in this series? I don't have the answer. But, by God, Alabama owns it right now. And until Georgia gets another opportunity, it might be next year, maybe playoffs, who knows. That's not going to be put to rest. But everything else is still in front of you. Everything else is still in front of you for Georgia. They just got to keep getting better and better. I felt like those young guys last night, some of those guys grew up. And we get to the stuff. I made some notes on some guys that really hadn't played a ton this year that I thought had good games.
Absolutely.
Marvin Charles, I want to tell you real quick. Georgia fans, you do know how Tennessee feels, and it's not just from Alabama. This was Georgia's fate in the 90s with Florida. Okay.
For
20 years with Florida. So Georgia fans have been knowing how Tennessee fans feel about that rivalry. Hell, they feel that they feel that way about the Tennessee rivalry in the 90s.
Yeah. Those 90 Florida games, they weren't really close.
Yeah. And even the ones that were, they just found a way. Yeah. They found a way to lose. You know, I mean, you know, except for here and there.
Yeah. Guys, look, get over to our friends at sunheist.com. Shane Heist got out, hung out with us on location over at Redstone Market the other day. Always good to see him, talk with him. Super great guy, man. And they run a fantastic business. Look, if you are unfamiliar with Sun Heist, great sunglasses at a great price. Free shipping, $65 or more. Super lightweight frames, injected polarization. The list goes on and on as to the reasons why to go with Sun Heist.
I got a couple pair yesterday, and I'm telling you right now, I wore them during the whole afternoon tailgate. I wore them today running around. The one thing I think, the difference for me, just putting them on, lightweight.
Yes.
Really lightweight glasses. Loved them. I'd buy another pair in a heartbeat. I promise you right now. Some of our sponsors we know, some of them we don't really know, and some of the things, we welcome everybody. Those glasses are badass, and I enjoy the pair I had. I had those pair right there. I had those yesterday. They work. They look great. Lenses are perfect. Lightweight. I like a lightweight glass. I don't want anything damn thick and heavy on me. But man, I'm all in now after I got a pair yesterday.
Yeah. So get over to sunheights.com, use promo code DOGSHQ20, DAWGSHQ20, for 20% off your purchase. And that doesn't work just once. You can use that anytime you check out. You'll get yourself some Christmas gifts, man. People are up. Speaking of doing a good thing for yourself, get over to MyPerfectFranchise.net. If you're looking to shake things up in your business and personal life, they have a ton of ways for you to expand your business portfolio with a ton of different franchises. Andy Ludicky and the team specialize in this. They've built businesses, they've run franchises, and now they help connect others with franchises. So MyPerfectFranchise.net, the place to go if you want to make some changes in your life and your professional life. Get over, see how they can help you today. MyPerfectFranchise.net.
Can I ask a question here? Derek T. asks a good question. Derek, appreciate you asking that. So Rusty, is Sam Pittman done with coaching? When you always say never say never, but when I tell you there's a 1% chance this guy's coaching somewhere again, he's done. He's finished up his lake house in Hot Springs, Arkansas. This man has a horse track. This man has a casino. This man has a downtown. This man has a badass infinity pool with speakers built into the wall with a swim up bar.
And a buyout now.
And a buyout. Let me rephrase that. He has a pool, he has a bar, and he has a double lot with a cove. His house is completely done, a project he's been working on about 2 or 3 years. Do you really think that Sam Pittman's not going to sit there and have some cold ones, or do you think he's going to go mess with a 10th grader and try to recruit?
And he's got a $50,000 bill anytime he wants it to go speak at a coach's clinic and to be a consultant. So
listen, I've already told him. I texted him last week, and I just told him, look, man, tough loss against Memphis. We shared a few messages. I've known Sam for a long time, and I won't hide that. We're good friends. I love him to death. He's been super good to me. I'm just telling you, man, this dude. Arkansas was his dream job. He gave it everything he possibly had. And is he hurt today? Yeah, he probably is hurt. But at the end of the day, also, I'll tell you this, he loved his time at Georgia. He loved working for Kirby. He loved that recruiting room. He loved those teams. He was rooting for Georgia in those national championship games. I promise you, I've told this story a million times. When Tate Ratledge, when he told him he was leaving, and Tate Ratledge started taking those calls from Tennessee, lifetime Tennessee family, lifetime Tennessee huge family. You know, Sam Pittman was 24 hours into being the Arkansas head coach. He had a million things going on. He called Tate Ratledge himself and said, you don't need to go anywhere else but Georgia. You need to go to Georgia just because I'm not there. He didn't have to do that. Kirby didn't ask him to do that. He did that on his own. And that tells you what type of person he is. So, you never say never. I would be completely shocked, but he will go into interviews. He'll be great. Hell, we can get him on here one night. You know what I mean? So great dude. I hate it didn't work out for him, but man, he really is behind the scenes. He really is that person. Funny story. We're at Luke Combs concert one night and I'm with him and we had a few. I turn around and I said, who's that big dude right there? Who's that dude towering over the whole crowd? Yeah, it was Ben Cleveland, one of his kids that he's coaching. You know what I mean? And it was so funny to see, you see Coach Pittman look at his lineman and they both just cheered when they gave a little tip and that was it. You know what I mean? So he was at a concert. His players at a concert. Didn't do anything about it. So I wish him the best. I know we'll talk soon. And he loved his time at Georgia. Really did.
Guys, looking at last night, we've talked a lot about what went wrong, but let's maybe flip the script a little bit because I do think, and I said this earlier, there were some things that were positive in my takeaway from it. And I'll give you three things that were very positive. One was Chauncey Bowens, one was Josh McCray, and one was Colby Young. And I say that because those three guys played their ass off. There was a lot of hard effort, and you want to talk about tone setters and guys kind of leading the way. I think that those are three guys that you can kind of turn to and really kind of say, hey, look, this is the energy and the effort that everybody has to give moving forward. Those three guys absolutely stood out to me yesterday. And like I said, I think can be big positives, not only, on the stat sheet, but moving forward from a team motivation standpoint. What about you guys? What went right in your mind? You mentioned the offensive line play you felt like took a step forward.
I mean, yeah, man. I mean, listen, the big concern was the turnstile at right tackle, and that wasn't an issue. Pass protection from the right side was not an issue. Bo Hughley did a pretty good job, had a couple penalties, but did a pretty good job. Juan Gaston did a good job. Those guys run blocked well. I thought Georgia run blocked really well as an offensive line. Like, if I look at that game and I think about, you know, what unit got better during the bye week, there's no question the offensive line got better than during the bye week. You know, and listen, Stacy Searles, been on him, man. I mean, again, I went back to last year and I talked all offseason kind of about, all right, I saw you run the ball well at times. I know you had injuries. I get that. But the offensive line, no consistency last year, none whatsoever. Then you come into this year and right tackle, right side of the O-line has been an issue in pass protection, you know, for portions of every game and for all of the Tennessee game. I mean, coming back home helped. And I said that I thought it would. Well, so did, you know, the bye week, because they got some stuff fixed. And, you know, that's a positive. I think that's a very good thing. I actually thought, you know, while I put Bobo into a long line of things in that game that if they were a little better, Georgia can win that game. Look at some of the things he dialed up in that game. You know, the sluggo to Colby Branch, Colby Young for the touchdown. Colby Branch plays shortstop for Georgia baseball. Young with the sluggo for the touchdown. The play to Talon Taylor that he dropped, you know, split cover two with a post route that was gorgeous. They ran it well. Zachariah, he even got Zachariah Branch open earlier in that. And Gunner probably should have ran it rather than trying to make a little bit of a tougher throw, but he tried to make that throw. You know, I even thought a couple of really good screen calls to Zach Branch that Zach Branch kind of bailed Gunner Stockton out and made something positive out of him, but there was something there, you know, in each thing. The run game, the way it was called. And then, you know, above, you know, every, you know, the tall sweep down near the goal line, you know, like that was a well-designed Georgia
flag. Hold on. I promise I told him I'd do on the podcast that he earned it. We're sitting there last night. They come up to the line of scrimmage and Rose sitting right here behind
me. God, I was trying to figure out where you were going. I forgot about that.
Sitting here on the – Jake Rowe is sitting right beside me. They come up to the formation. They go in motion. Jake Rowe goes, if they run tall sweep right here and the boundary's touchdown, they got it blocked. They lined up and they run tall sweep. Everybody in the damn press box is going, let Jake Rowe start calling plays.
Yeah, yeah.
Jake Rowe called it right there on the spot. I mean, Jake's like, I mean, he ain't looking at nobody. He's sitting there watching the game. He goes, they got him. If they run tall sweep right here and the boundary's touchdown, bam. So Rowe called it, man.
Yeah, so, you know, they outflanked the defense with a motion there that I thought was that was done really well. You know, I thought there was some really good big play generation type stuff from the offense. You know, that guys still working on consistency. I think the bigger issue right now for the offense is getting Gunner to kind of settle down and see everything, which, you know, he did better in the Tennessee game than he did this one. He didn't look lost in this game, didn't look timid. But also looked a little jittery early, and I think that's why the offense got off to a slower start. There's still a lot of room to grow offensively. But just, you know, just that whole run game stuff is – and I'll point to the defense too. DeMello Jones, you know, coming in, playing major snaps at cornerback. Clearly Daniel Harris was not available for whatever reason. Kirby was kind of – he mentioned a groin injury, but he also mentioned – also said something to the tune of, hey, we played the best players that gave us the best chance to win. I wonder what's going on there. You know, like, I really don't know what's going on there, because it was a little odd the way he answered that question. Man, they put DeMello Jones in there, and I don't know if it was like DeMello kind of coming out of a little bit out of nowhere to take some snaps away from Ellis Robinson. But until that jumping on the pile on fourth down, which was a really silly penalty on Ellis Robinson's part, it's terrible. I don't think it cost him a whole lot, but it was a terrible penalty. Until then, Ellis Robinson played a great second half. You know, so it almost like it was like a lit a fire under him that the guy that was kind of same class there jumped in and did some good things. So, and then, but you know, ultimately, you know, there are a lot of good things that Georgia did in that game. They just didn't do enough to win the game, and they did enough bad things and shot themselves in the foot enough to lose it. And but I certainly don't think you walk away from that game saying there's nothing good about this football team. There are some very good players and very good things that happened in that game that allowed Georgia to be in a position to win it whenever there were a lot of people down 14-0 that were like, this is over. And it was far from over, and Georgia had its chances and you know, pressed me on it. They should have won that game.
Quick note on DeMello Jones yesterday. I know we discussed PFF as just a singular data point, but the highest graded defender with over 10 snaps on PFF.
How many snaps overall did he end up with?
I believe he was like 28 or 24, something like that. I forget exactly the number. I'll pull it up real quick.
I'll say this. Justin Williams should have played more than 8 snaps in that game.
I agree with that. Played 8
snaps. And another thing that caught me off guard with the PFF numbers from that game,
DeMello Jones played 43 snaps.
Quintavious Johnson played 56 snaps. He played more than three times as many snaps as Chris Jones and Elo Madozi played together. I thought those two combined for 15 snaps.
I'm gonna go back and watch it, but I thought he played a really good game. I know that horse collar was just a tough deal, man. But
he had some splash plays in that game. Ran some stuff down from the backside and had a big TFL.
That dude, you talking about music to everybody's ears? If Quentin Johnson can turn the switch on him and be that guy, Quintavious Johnson, that would be a huge deal for Georgia. Listen, a lot of people in here asking about pass rush. Let's address that, and that's one thing that, you know, that's a concern. You know, where are they going to get it? I thought, you know, Kirby said this in the presser. I saw it too. A lot of times they had a free blitzer last night, and Ty Simpson got it out. Okay, you're trying to dial up pressure by bringing an extra. You know, I want to see somebody beat the guy in front of you in a four-man front and get pressure. That's where they're not getting anything. I think I saw a stat today, might have been from Cole Kublik, that Georgia's defensive line only has 4 tackles for a loss this year. And that's definitely not, so far, is not what, you know, just it can't happen. I do think they had some guys that were real close last night, but they were, you know, pressures coming off the edge, extra blitzer, those types of things. Sometimes I just want to see a freaking instant pressure, you know what I mean? Beat a tackle inside on a swim move, or, you know, beat a guard and get pressure like that and get a sack. That's just not happening, man.
Josh Hobbs, that wasn't about money, buddy. Damon Wilson paying whatever he wanted, that wasn't about money.
Yeah, we can tell you after Friday night, we heard a story. That definitely wasn't. Georgia definitely tried to keep Damon Wilson. We heard it from a great source Friday night. I can assure you that. Me and Jake enjoyed the conversation with somebody that we really trust within the program, and he had direct knowledge of that one. And Georgia, they tried their best to keep Damon Wilson, and he was going somewhere else.
No doubt. So, Rusty, anything else right that you saw that made you feel
good? Isaiah Horton, the guy. I mean, you know, talking about a D lineman, he played a lot more snaps than I thought. I was like, okay, it's time for him to come on. Defensive lineman out of Miami. I don't know how he graded, but I thought Jordan Hall against the run really gave Alabama fits. I'll tell you this too. I don't know the grade, but I felt like Drew Bobo more than held his own against Tim Keenan. And now everybody was kind of worried about that. There was a couple of people that I talked to late last night, early on, was like, hey, we played good there. But I do think Jordan Hall probably played his best game as a Georgia Bulldog. He was hell to deal with in there. He was creating a little bit of havoc, especially in the run game. And, you know, that's where it's got to get better for them. And it starts up there. And, you know, they held Alabama Alabama only averaged 3.1 yards in the run game. Alabama's offensive line is freaking huge. I mean, those dudes walk by me in pregame. They are massive.
Look, like, man, I'm not – I'll tell you this right now. I am not – upset with how Kyron Jones tried to approach tackling Cade Proctor. It was that was a little bit of self-preservation on his part.
I told somebody today.
Go ahead.
I told somebody today, I said, if Georgia would have ran that, whoever caught that ball would have torn both ACLs. Sure. You know, you just don't put a 365-pound man out there and having somebody trying to cut him. But you know what? Kudos to them. A hell of a play. But dude, there's no way in hell I would have damn. I'd have saved that for a 2-point. I'd have saved that for a 2-point.
There. If Georgia had won that game, if they'd have found a way to win that game, every O lineman on Georgia's roster would have been in Stacy Searles and Mike Bobo's office on Monday morning begging for an opportunity to put that play in. They would all want it. Speaking of Kyron Jones, I thought that Georgia moving to Ja'Cory Thomas settled some things down in the secondary.
Yeah.
You know, and listen, I think Kyron Jones is a phenomenal athlete, and he will come up and strike you. He will. But, man, his fingers, you know, you ever see a carpenter's fingernails? You know, just all of them are blue. His fingernails are blue from getting his hands shut in the cookie jar. Because he keeps his hands in the cookie jar all the time, and his eye discipline is just not where it needs to be. And you know, I don't know if Ja'Cory Thomas is the long-term answer there. Georgia clearly trusts him enough to get him in a game. But, man, that's kind of two games in a row. You know, Ja'Cory ended up, you know, kind of losing Braylon Stanley against Tennessee for a big game. But there's two games in a row kind of where Ja'Cory – played pretty well, you know, when he came into the game at safety. So I almost wonder if there needs to be kind of a reevaluation of what they're doing at that safety spot, because yeah. Georgia got away with one on Saturday. And Alabama ended up scoring anyway. Maybe if Alabama would have scored quicker in that situation, maybe the defense doesn't get as worn out and spend as much time on the field. They ended up scoring anyway. But, you know, they listen, I'll say this about Tylan Taylor too. I know he dropped that pass. But, you know, moving forward, knowing that 11's in the ball game, and, you know, you've got a guy that can just blow past your defense like that and split the safeties. I know what you're smiling about, Jake Roos. You're thinking about Arian Smith and drop passes.
I'm not. I'm thinking back. There was a specific comment on the board last night, and somebody said, where was Noah Thomas in that situation? And I said, not standing by himself in the secondary. Okay,
yeah.
That's where he wasn't.
That's what Tylan Taylor brings for
yes.
him, explosiveness, yep. and he got there. So, you know, I believe he catches that pass 8-9 times out of 10. He did not catch that one. I get it. I will say this to Georgia fans, though. Guys, there were so many people, and I know some of them were the same ones that I'm going to mention on the back in here. So many people who said, why is a true freshman trying to catch that ball in that situation? Guys, I've heard it all off season. We don't get true freshmen involved at Georgia. First of all, that's false, clearly. And number two, listen, he's an elite talent. It's clear that he's an elite talent. He's standing by himself behind Alabama secondary. He didn't make the play. And that sucks for him. You hope he shrugs it off like Ladd McConkey was able to do in 2022 when folks were calling for him to get benched and never come back. Like London Humphreys did 2 weeks ago whenever he didn't catch a back shoulder fade. They said, let him go. You know, send him out of the game. I don't know what's going on with the Noah Thomas situation, but I will say this. I think it's more of a Gunner issue than anything else. I think Gunner's kind of locked into some guys he's comfortable throwing the football to, one of them being Colby Young, another being Zachariah Branch. And I think he's a little bit too jumpy in trying to get those guys the football. But I do believe they need to get Noah Thomas involved 100%. Now, if you're saying that after a game where Georgia scored 44 points, I'm much less inclined to listen to you than I am after the Alabama game, whenever clearly Georgia needed some guys to go make a play. And but you know, they got to find a way to get Noah Thomas more involved in this offense.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think a lot of people would feel that way. Rusty, I said last night on the board in response to the Tylan Taylor drop, I'd be willing to go out on a pretty strong limb and say I believe that he will redeem himself before his time in Athens is over.
I imagine Saturday against Kentucky, he's gonna get some touches. You know, I mean, Kirby, that you can't do that. I mean, that was a shot play. He came right in, and they went straight to him. Straight split the safeties. You dial that up. It's a hell of a ball by Gunner. Didn't make it, but I think Tylan Taylor is gonna be he's gonna be that guy, and I have no hesitation to think this guy's not gonna be a huge part of the puzzle in Athens. You hate it. Listen, you got to make the play, man. And he'll learn from that. And just a tough one, man. Tough one to see where me and Jake were standing. I was like, dude, he's open. Like that's straight shot play. And boy, what a ball. And you know, didn't catch it, but yeah, I have no hesitation in saying Tylan Taylor won't be a
So-so says our defense has no pass rush. They were able to get a little bit more. They were able to get something consistent going in the second half. But let me tell you something. I do think this staff will adjust, because I look back to the 2023 season, and several games into the year, you kind of had that same thing going on. They got Damon Wilson involved. They got Jalen Carter more involved, Jalen Walker more involved. And I do think at some point you're going to start seeing Chris Cole. And listen, I don't know why L.O. Madozzi's not playing much, but I can tell you with 100% accuracy, if you just go back and watch previous games and you kind of watch Quintavious Johnson and you watch Chris Jones play that outside backer position, and then you watch L.O. Madozzi do some stuff, he moves differently. And I thought that was an athletic mismatch for Alabama's tackles. Georgia clearly did not feel the same way. Maybe it was because they wanted to go with a light box and they wanted their best run defender across the front there. I don't really know. But I think ultimately they got to get their best athletes on the field in terms of getting after the quarterback. And I think that comes down to kind of getting L.O. Madozzi and Chris Cole involved. So Josh Hobbs asked, when are y'all going to tell us the Damon Wilson story? We don't really know it. We just know it wasn't about money. Honestly, Rusty, speculation here, full disclosure, seemed like more of a Jermaine Johnson situation. Like, I want to be put in a situation where they're going to put me on the end of the line of scrimmage and all I've got to do is get upfield. Yeah. And, and he was looking for that more so than he was looking for money.
Yeah. I mean, Georgia certainly made an attractive offer for him to stay. And I'll tell you that. And I promise you the person that told the story would absolutely know. So we'll leave it at that. But they tried to get they tried to keep him, and he'd been a big piece of the puzzle, and I think Georgia realized that they wanted him and just didn't work out. And I tell you what, he wanted to go to Ohio State and that didn't work out for him.
Yeah.
He wanted to go to Ohio State. It was down to Georgia and Ohio State out of high school. He went up there for that Michigan game and froze his you-know-what off, and he was like, damn that, kid from South Florida, I'm going to Georgia. I think he tried to go to Ohio State. It did not work out, and he ended up going to Missouri. So, it is what it is now with that situation.
Guys, speaking of situations, you probably needed a pulled one last night. And I hope you reach for a Modelo because it is Modelo season. Good friends of ours, great beer, and goes down super smooth. Perfect for the tailgate this weekend. Hey, pair it up with the Whataburger food truck. Go out and have yourself a big day there in Athens. But it is Modelo season. It's the official beer of the college football playoff. So you will see plenty of it. I remember after the national championship, it has been for a few years, and after the national championship in Indianapolis, I remember people just walking around with like cases of it. They were just going to the beer vendors and like buying them out of whatever Modelo they had so that they could keep themselves out of the ice cold that was in Indianapolis at that time. It was a great, great time, but Modelo there all the way. So go Dogs, go Modelo, get yourself a cold one.
We had a question in here. Were recruits impressed last night at least? I'd say so. Georgia got two commitments yesterday flying under the radar there in the 2027 class. Both of them offensive linemen, one a three-star guard, and the other one of the best offensive tackles in the country for 2027. Another Langston Hughes offensive lineman, which is, kind of the right side of Georgia's offensive line sometimes.
The pipeline, yeah.
Kelsey Adams was actually from North Clayton and it transferred to Langston Hughes. And I'm telling you, he's a big 6'7", another one of those guys. And shoot, they can't recruit Langston Hughes enough right now. Those kids are producing. Those kids are playing. And Langston Hughes is tough again. So, yeah, listen, 2027's a while to go. Here's one thing I learned a long time ago. Jake Rose covered recruiting. Roos has covered recruiting. High school players don't get caught up so much in wins and losses.
They don't.
They like – now, there's a different
– now, the commitments came here before the game, by the way.
So. Yeah, there's a different dynamic. Yeah, let's have before the game. There's a different dynamic now when you start talking about NIL, so that's a part of it. But that kid is sitting in that environment going, this is super cool. It's rowdy. It's lights. There's great scenery all around me, and I feel like I can play early here. That's what wins those kids. And then you have to get that NIL involved as well. So, Georgia's going to continue to recruit at a high level. Last night did not hurt Georgia at all in any shape, fashion, or form. I can guarantee you with a recruit, because that place was electric. It was fantastic. It was loud. Didn't get the win, but you know, those players left there either going, hey, I can play early here. I like it. It's a great environment. Did nothing to hurt Georgia.
A lot of guys, you say that, Rusty, and the way that I've always told people is that, look, most high school guys are not Trevor Lawrence. They lose at some point during their high school experience. Yeah. So they understand what it's like to be in the arena. They know that wins and losses are part of the game. And so I agree, they don't contextualize it in quite the same way that fans do. They don't expect that you're going to win every single game. And so the ability to, though, to get there, see the facilities, to have a chance to be a part of that atmosphere, to play in something like that, that's what you're selling as much as you are wins and losses in this day and age. So I think that, you know, look, off to a fantastic start with a couple of bodies like that for your offensive line for 2027. Long way to go. Look, it's a long way to go on 2026. It's just now October. So we've got some time with the upcoming class, let alone the class ahead of them. But look, at the end of the day, and the numbers bear it out, most guys who commit stick. I know that it gets a lot more coverage when they don't, but at the end of the day, most guys who make commitments stick with those commitments. And Kyson Mallard looks like he was related to Julian Rochester or Montavious Atkinson. I mean, he's got that like grown man head to him. Look at that. I mean, look at that picture, man. That's yeah, that looks like a Madden creative player, right?
That there. Man has two children in high school right now. that is a 41-year-old individual, right?
Same face my dad made. I bring my report. That's the same face my dad made. Like, I bring a report card home back in the day.
Yes, whoever's on the other end of that gaze needs to watch out,
Rusty, have you seen this? Have you seen this kid in action?
I have seen him in person. I have not seen him in action. I have seen Kelsey Adams in action. There's actually a lot. I was hearing he was going to end up at Lee County, which is right up the street from Albany Westover. But he stayed at Westover, but he's a kid that I've known about for a while. I've seen him in person. Haven't seen him play, but I have been around Kelsey Adams in a couple of camp settings, and I can say I can realize why he is. He was heavily coveted as well. You know, there's so many of those big kids. I mean, there's only so many of those. We start talking about winning the in-state battles. Like, it's a long way to go, but certainly those kids had committable offers and they jumped on it yesterday.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. Guys, Georgia, Kentucky coming down the pipe. We will be back with you later this week to preview that game, talk up to you about all of it. I believe we got some Dogs HQ Plus on tap for this week. We've got Rusty will be joining you as well on Tuesday night. So, listen, there's a lot more to say about this particular game, and there's a lot more to say about this season in general. There is a lot of football still to be played for the Georgia Bulldogs. Nobody's happy about it, but there's a lot of time to correct the mistakes and still get everywhere you want to be. We appreciate you tuning in to the Georgia Show tonight. Rusty Mansell and Jake Rowe. I'm Jake Roos, and we will see you very soon. Make sure to like and subscribe.